You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
The number of Americans who identify as bisexual has tripled in the last decade. That number went from 1.8% in 2008 to 3.3% in 2018, so almost tripled. According to the General Social Survey, which has tracked American attitudes and preferences, social, political, and sexual, for more than four decades. I'd like to think I'm responsible for some small slice of this giant uptick. 2008 to 2018, I have been talking closeted bisexuals into coming out on this show that entire time. Tossing the column and some private conversations. And some weeks it feels like that's pretty much all I do. And don't get me wrong, I love doing it. I am happy to do it. Other studies have shown that bisexuals have worse health outcomes, worse than the general, i.e. straight population, and worse than gays and lesbians. Bisexuals have higher rates of depression and anxiety and are at higher risk of suicide than gays and lesbians. Bisexuals are also less likely to be out to the most important people in their lives, to their friends, to their families, and to their partners. And I'm thinking that might be related. The closet, as anyone who spent any time there can tell you, is a stressful and depressing place. It'll be interesting to see if the health outcomes for bisexuals don't improve as more bisexuals come out. The Christian Action Network, a public advocacy and education organization based on biblical principles, values, traditions, and American ideals, points us to an interesting detail in the GSS study. The number of men and women who identify as gay or lesbian has remained relatively stable, as has the number of men who identify as bisexual. The jump over the last decade, the tripling in the number of people who identify as bisexual, can be attributed almost entirely to women coming out as bisexual. Now, that's not quite how they put it at CAN. CAN, the most busted name in news. No, the headline over at CAN was, "Women drive hike in bisexual whoring 9-1 over men!" Exclamation point. No amount of truth proclaiming can turn some adamantly scornful whores and whoremongers from their sins, CAN goes on. And it appears from a recent survey that women drive the whoring into bisexual lasciviousness by a margin of 9-1 over men. Good job, ladies. Let's try to close that gap. Bye, guys. And speaking of hateful assholes who market themselves under the Christian label, I opened the show a couple of weeks ago with a rant about a new anti-choice law in Ohio. Well, the GOP in Georgia, fresh from stealing the governor's office from Stacey Abrams through voter suppression efforts, they looked at Ohio and said, hold my beer. The governor of Georgia, the illegitimate governor of Georgia, has just signed into law the most draconian anti-choice, anti-woman law ever passed. This is some Romania under Ceausescu shit. It not only bans abortion at 5.5 weeks before a woman even knows she's pregnant, but women who leave the state to seek abortions could be charged with murder. Women who have miscarriages could be investigated by prosecutors. And if a prosecutor determines that a woman intentionally induced her miscarriage or may have unintentionally done something that resulted in her having a miscarriage, she could be charged with murder. The penalty for murder in pro-life Georgia is death. Georgia's new law is unconstitutional. Georgia's new law also bans all sorts of forms of birth control. And it's unconstitutional. At least it is at the moment. All bets are off when this reaches our partisan, packed and stacked Supreme Court. Like I said a couple of weeks ago when I was ranting about Ohio, we're going to have to claw back the courts, and that's going to require a generational effort. In the short run, however, we have got to punish states that criminalize abortion and threaten women with jail time for thinking they should be in charge of their own bodies. A lot of films and television shows are shot in Georgia, and four production companies, it was good to see this week, have announced that they won't film in Georgia until this law is off the books. Mark Duplass and David Simon lead two of those production companies, and Simon had this to say on Twitter about his decision. "I'm sorry, but there's no conceivable way that I can, as an employer, ethically ask any of my female colleagues to work in a jurisdiction that limits their healthcare options and impairs their civil liberties. It isn't possible." I'd like to see more film and TV companies follow Simon and Duplass's example, and not just film and TV Georgia raked in $66 billion in tourism revenue in 2018, also a 2018 record. If you belong to a professional association that's currently planning a convention in Georgia this year or next or ever, now is the time to speak up. Now is the time to pull out. A birth control method that is currently not illegal in Georgia, but I'm sure they're working on it. All right, coming up on today's show, on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your cues, lots of my A's. Also on the micro edition this week, Dr. Landon Trost from the Mayo Clinic joins us to demystify and talk about vasectomies, including whether a vasectomy is reversible. And on the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, twice as long and no ads and more guests, a lesbian who endured years of quote-unquote conversion therapy joins us to talk about her experiences. All that coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Talkspace, online therapy that makes it easy to get extra support. Use the offer code SAVAGE for $45 off your first month. Go to Talkspace.com and use the offer code SAVAGE.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by OpenFit, offering streaming workouts for every goal. Change the way you work out today and get a special extended 30-day free trial membership when you text my code SAVAGE to 303030.
Hi, I'm an early 30s gay man on the West Coast. My partner and I have an open relationship and it works wonderfully for us. My question is about how safe we need to be with other people. We're both on PrEP, but our main rule thus far has been that condoms are a requirement if we're having anal sex with someone outside of our relationship. We don't use protection with other people for oral. Notice that a lot more gay guys are resistant to using condoms as PrEP becomes more common. With HIV not really a threat as long as we take PrEP correctly, is there any point in using protection for anal if we're not going to for oral? We understand there's a risk of other STIs, and we are willing to take that risk in the case of oral. I'm just wondering if the risk is any different in the case of anal.
You put me in a position where I have to tell you something that you already know. PrEP protects you from HIV. It doesn't protect you from syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, herpes, HPV. Condoms protect very effectively against chlamydia, syphilis, gonorrhea, and provide some degree of protection against the transmission of herpes and HPV, which most sexually active gay men in open relationships either already have and don't know they have or already been exposed to multiple times. So using condoms for anal protects you from anal syphilis, anal gonorrhea, anal chlamydia. Not using condoms for oral puts you at risk for oral gonorrhea, oral syphilis, and chlamydia. Really where you guys are with the condoms and being on PrEP and this new reality where people who are know themselves to be HIV positive and are in treatment and taking their medications have undetectable viral loads and undetectable equals uninfectious, and you guys are on PrEP, so you're protected and uninfected. Do you need to use condoms at all? Well, yeah, to protect yourself from all those other sexually transmitted infections. Absolutely, yes, you do need to use condoms. It was the case during the AIDS crisis in the worst years of the AIDS epidemic that many gay men used condoms for anal and didn't use condoms for oral sex because it was a lot harder to acquire or transmit the virus orally than anally. When people were using condoms, largely gay men, the majority of gay men, using condoms for anal but not for oral, rates of other STIs, syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, plummeted to historic lows. And I think we can infer there, and I'd want an epidemiologist to come on the show and confirm, but I think we can infer there that there was some benefit to condoms for anal, even if no condoms for oral, and that people perhaps were less likely to contract syphilis or gonorrhea orally in the same way that they're less likely to contract HIV orally. So at this time that gay men were using condoms pretty regularly, majority of gay men perhaps, for anal sex, rates of other STIs orally fell, and genitally and buttally fell. Now, these STIs are less prevalent orally than they are in the genitals and the anus than they are in the throat. So that could be a contributing factor there. So all of this should inform the choice you and your partner are going to make about condoms with others. There seems to be an emerging community norm, or already emerged community norm, that condoms don't necessarily have to be used in a hookup because everybody's on PrEP and that protects you from HIV and the other things you don't really have to worry about. Well, there are drug resistant and antibiotic resistant strains of gonorrhea that are emerging. We are currently in the, I don't know, fifth, sixth, seventh year of a syphilis epidemic. And while these things are still treatable here, they are hugely unpleasant. So were I in your shoes, I would continue to use condoms for anal and perhaps make a case-by-case subjective judgment or distinction while also allowing myself to make, in special cases, a different judgment. There's somebody you want to get with and they don't want to use condoms and you know something about their health, or you really, really want to get with them and you want to make this exception and then you're going to go get tested. Yeah, maybe then. People are doing all sorts of different kinds of math in their heads about the degree of risk that they're comfortable with in our new undetectable equals uninfectious and PrEP universe. And in this universe, we have a syphilis epidemic. And in this universe, we have antibiotic-resistant gonorrhea emerging. I think you and your partner are making the right call. It can be difficult to continue to make that right call in an environment where no one else is making the same call.
Hey, Dan, 22-year-old polyamorous trans guy here. I have a moral question for you. I have an adorable friend who's a couple years older than me, and he's still in the closet. He's thirsty and socially awkward, and I'm his only gay friend. He tells me how cute I am a lot. We both openly lust over my boyfriend, who loves the attention. My friend recently made a remark that could be read as a proposition, and I can't stop thinking about it. I'm not personally attracted to this guy, sexually or romantically, but I've been thinking about what it would be like for my boyfriend and I to treat him as a very special guest star and show him the ropes, as it were. Part of this is because I like him, and I'm pretty sure he'd be really into this, but there's another selfish reason that makes me think that I shouldn't even think about doing this. The thing is, I'm mostly interested in the power dynamic here. I like feeling attractive and wanted, and something about fucking a guy who's more into me than I am into him really turns me on. I like this guy a lot, and I don't want to use him, especially not for his first time. Because of the complicated emotions here, I'm not even going to float this to him. I really don't think I should do it. Here's my question, though. Is it morally okay for my gratification in a sexual encounter to be based around the other person being more attracted to me than I am of them? Is it wrong to be more turned on by the power dynamic than by the person? This seems potentially dehumanizing enough to be a varsity-level kink that I shouldn't touch.
Is it morally okay for you to fuck somebody when part of what is turning you on about fucking them is you're more attractive than they are? That you enjoy that power differential? Yeah, I think that's morally permissible so long as you're not leveraging your beauty to get that person to do something that they don't want to do, that they're not comfortable doing, so long as you're not making promises to that person that you have no intention to keep. If you are putting your beauty out there on a platter, or your beauty and your boyfriend's beauty out there on a platter, and allowing this person to make assumptions about not just being the very special guest star for an evening, but perhaps being the third in your relationship at some point down the road, or you being interested in them emotionally in such a way that you may then partner with them instead of partnering with your partner. As long as you aren't making false promises, if all you're offering this person is to show them the ropes because you like them and you may be more physically beautiful than they are, but you are attracted to them enough as a person that you desire them too, whatever kick you derive around this dynamic, if you have no intention of folding this dynamic into the sex as a power play game, yeah, that's your own private thing. And you're allowed to derive your own private thrills from an interaction with somebody else. Again, so long as you're doing no harm, so long as you're leaving that person in better shape than you found them. And it seems like that's your overarching desire here. This person, good friend, just coming out, attracted to you, attracted to your boyfriend. You guys might be the perfect first experience for this person. And they will enjoy you and your boyfriend for their reasons, hopefully in a way that doesn't make you feel exploited or creeped on, and you will enjoy them for your reasons. And you're conscientious enough that you can enjoy them for your reasons without being exploitative or making them feel creeped out on.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. They make it simple and intuitive to create your website, blog, or online store. You can create a beautiful website with Squarespace's all-in-one platform. There's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade ever. They have templates that were created by world-class designers that you can just drop in and it looks good right away. Squarespace is used by a wide range of creative types, businesses, musicians, designers, artists, restaurants, and more. If you plan to create a website for your business, Squarespace has all the tools you need to get it up and running quickly. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage, and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Dan, Nancy, and the Tech Savvy Irish Youth. I'm a 34-year-old straight-ish man from the West. I've been with my wife for about 10 years. I'm married for a little over a year. And we both want to have kids. Like I said, I'm 34. She's 32. She's pretty much ready now to start trying. But I'm just not quite there. Like, I know, you know, knowing friends and how their lives have changed with infants around, I just kind of feel like I need to have one more, like, crazy, sexy adventure a little bit before, you know, the inevitable life change of pregnancy and having infants. So I said to my wife that we should have one more threesome, like have one more threesome and then I'd be good to go to start trying to get pregnant. You know, like a lot of straight-ish guys, threesomes are one of my biggest fantasies. We've had it before, but it's been several years and there's some really good reasons, you know, earlier on why we didn't have them during this period, dealing with some issues around alcohol and infidelity. And I think we're on the right side of those now and have been for a little while, but we just haven't had a threesome in that time. Even though we kind of got some of that fixed and we're both kind of on the same page about it. I guess I just feel like it'll be so much more difficult in the future having kids around, you know, to have the time and energy to make it happen when we haven't been able to do it now. So you know, it might be a huge gap and, you know, then we'll be older and I don't know. My wife is okay with the idea. You know, she wants to have kids now-ish, but she's okay, you know, wanting to do a threesome first. But recently I'm just kind of wondering, is this just a really shitty and stupid thing for me to want? Is it coming off as like an ultimatum? You know, you must have a threesome with me or I'll kind of withhold having children. And it's not at all what I want it to be. Like, I want it to be a fun, you know, exciting, sexy thing for us to do before settling down into kids and that sort of lifestyle. So I guess my question is, you know, what do you think of this idea, wanting kind of one semi-last threesome before having kids? Is the premise for it, you know, sound or is it stupid or am I a jerk for suggesting it? And you know, I know how you feel about bachelor parties, right? And I'm in total agreement with that. And this sort of feels like that a little bit too, but I don't know. It just does seem really like your life changed with kids.
Dude, your wife already said yes. You floated this to your wife before floating it to your neighborhood sex advice podcaster, and she's down. She wants to have a threesome too before you have kids. Take that yes for an answer. She seems as interested in having this sexual adventure before you guys knuckle under, make that baby, crap out that kid, as interested as you. So, Yahtzee, stop picking lint out of your navel to examine and get back on Tinder, get back on other websites, go out there and find your very special guest star. I'm here from the future to tell you that you can have threesomes after you become a parent. That is a thing that parents do. Most of the people that you'll meet, most of the straight people you meet in organized swinging circles are parents, usually parents whose children are a bit older, but there are grandparents, usually, who very much would like to have your toddler over for the weekend. You may not be able to pull this off in the first year and change of your kid's life, but a 2-year-old, 3-year-old going to grandma and grandpa's house for the weekend while mom and dad have a staycation and a very special guest star or two or three over, that is a thing that you guys will be able to make happen for yourself. Yeah, in the same way that I think it's bad for couples to put it in their head that marriage is the end of fun and adventure, I think it's bad for people to put it in their own heads that parenting is the end of sexual adventure. Parenting complicates sexual adventure. It becomes logistically more challenging and therefore rarer in your life after you become a parent. So you do a little bit more advanced planning. You make sure that when you are going to have a sexual adventure together, that it fucking kicks. That it's awesome. And the beautiful thing about your sexual adventures having to be scheduled and planned is the planning of a sexual adventure is itself a sexual adventure. Most people in the kink scene, most people in the swinging scene, some overlap there, know this to be true, that when you set that date, even if it's a couple of months out and you're planning that sexual adventure with a very special guest star, you're going to go somewhere and do something crazy, you start fucking in advance of that fucking. You start dirty talking with each other about what you're going to do, and then you get turned on and you fuck some more, just the two of you. So, yeah. Now even mainstream couples counselors are saying to straight people who aren't interested in swinging and are monogamous and not interested in kink that they should borrow this tactic from the swingers and kinksters and make scheduled sex something exciting and fun to plan and plot out and look forward to and fuck in advance of and fuck in the wake of, as the swingers and kinksters do. So yeah, dude, have that threesome. Your wife wants to have that threesome too. Take yes for a fucking answer. And no, and take it from me that threesomes will be in your future after you become parents if you prioritize them. Not over your kids, never over your kids. But we can have more than one priority in our lives even after we're parenting. Getting fit and staying healthy always sounds easier said than done, doesn't it? Open Fit is bringing you something new that makes it even easier to never miss a sweat session. Lose the commute to the gym and let the workouts come to you. Open Fit takes all of the complexity out of losing weight and getting fit. It's a brand new, super simple streaming service that allows you to work out from the comfort of your living room in as little as 10 minutes a day. Everyone's bodies are different, and Open Fit gets that, which is why it's personalized to your needs with custom-tailored original content. Open Fit classes are led by some of the most effective and engaging trainers in the world. Forget about all the complexity and stress of getting fit and just press play and work out on your schedule. You can view on your computer, web-enabled TV, tablet, smartphone, and Roku. You can lose weight if that's your goal. You can flatten your abs if that's your goal. You can shape your body, or you can just get moving and feel more comfortable in your own skin. I build a lot of exercise and movement into my daily routine. I walk everywhere. I don't drive. And I try to work out a few times a week because it's really centering. They call exercise the natural antidepressant, and that is absolutely how it works for me. And OpenFit can help exercise work that way for you too. Change the way you work out with OpenFit. Use code SAVAGE so you can start a fitness journey personalized just for you. Again, use my code SAVAGE, S-A-V-A-G-E, and start using OpenFit for your journey to a healthier life. Right now, during the OpenFit 30-day challenge, my listeners get a special extended 30-day free trial membership to OpenFit when you text SAVAGE to 303030. You will get full access to OpenFit, all the workouts and nutrition information, totally free. Again, just text SAVAGE, S-A-V-A-G-E, to 303030. Standard message and data rates may apply.
Hi, Dan. I just had a kind of a weird Tinder exchange, and this is kind of like a mundane question. I guess it's not that important, but I'm just kind of curious what your perspective or what the other listeners' perspective is. I probably used Tinder like 25, like gone on like 25 Tinder dates or something. I don't know, not a ton, but like some. And I was about to do that with someone. We were going to meet up somewhere, and at the last minute, she was like, "Oh, my friend is coming. Like, we're sort of a package deal." I didn't really know what that meant. So I was like, "Oh, I would rather just like hang out one on, we were going to meet up at like a coffee shop, and I was like, I would kind of rather meet up one on one so we can like give each other our full attention." And she was like, "Oh, I don't feel comfortable meeting people in public without a bodyguard." And I was like, "What?" So I just texted back, "Okay, whatever." And she was like, "Your responses are off-putting." And she ended up not wanting to meet because I felt strange about meeting her with another person. Is that like a thing? Is that normal? Should I have just gone for it and been like, "Oh yeah, I'll meet you and your friend"? I don't know. It just seems kind of weird. I haven't had any other people request to meet up with a quote unquote bodyguard. And I felt like that. I was like, somebody like this probably just shouldn't even be online dating. Anyway, curious what you think.
This hasn't happened to you before. I don't think this is going to happen to you again. Meeting up in a public place, not a high stakes date, not dinner and drinks and an open-ended evening, but a quick meetup for coffee, that should be something a person is willing to do with you solo. That's the kind of meeting up in advance in a public place in a low stakes environment at a time of day when more ain't possible because you have other plans and so do they, or you got to get back to work and so do they. That's reasonable. And that provides somebody with an out and The public place provides somebody with the protections of being in a public place. Not that women haven't been assaulted in public places or made to feel threatened by men in coffee shops, but it is reasonable for you to expect that that would be a one-on-one meeting. And I wouldn't waste too much time wringing your hands about this or overthinking this. You've had a lot of Tinder dates. No one else has ever asked to bring a bodyguard. You hesitated and this person bolted right away. Did you a favor? So move the fuck on. Go have coffee with some other nice lady from Tinder who doesn't need to bring Kevin Costner along. If you're in a rough patch or just going through life's daily ups and downs, you need someone who will listen. But according to the National Alliance on Mental Health, LGBTQ folks are 3 times more likely to experience mental health challenges due to discrimination and social rejection, and therefore more in need of someone to talk to. Thankfully, Talkspace provides a support system trained to help members of the LGBTQ community handle our most challenging emotions around issues of gender, sexual identity, and orientation. Talkspace is an affordable, convenient way to take care of your mental health. Talkspace uses your preferences to match you with one of 4,000 therapists the same day you sign up. Their therapists are rigorously vetted and trained to help clients handle a range of challenges from anxiety to depression to LGBTQ-specific issues and beyond. Best of all, you get unlimited online messaging access to your therapist from the comfort of your devices. Talkspace is committed to helping LGBTQ folks experience acceptance and find support. That's why they provide a safe space for you to be open and honest about what you're going through. Their therapists help you work through challenges related to gender, sexuality, and other parts of life. More importantly, they're specifically trained in handling real-life issues LGBTQ folks face, from healthcare access to marriage equality, workplace discrimination, and more. Talkspace really couldn't be simpler. Send unlimited messages and hear back from your therapist daily, 5 days a week. And all you need is a computer with an internet connection or the Talkspace mobile app on your phone. Your conversation is completely confidential and can be done from the privacy of your device. And if you want to switch therapists, you can do so at any time at no extra cost. To match with a therapist for a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, go to Talkspace.com/savage. Make sure to use the code SAVAGE to get your first week on Talkspace free and show your support for the show. That's your first week of therapy absolutely free when you sign up today at Talkspace.com/savage.
Hey, Dan, I'm a 29-year-old straight female, and I have a rare stage 4 cancer. And currently on my dating profile, I wrote something along the lines of, afraid of commitment? No worries, I'm dying. Just sort of to put it out there in the beginning. I am having a liver transplant this August, and my problem is I don't know when to disclose this information, whether it's on my profile or first, second, or third date. I've sort of done both and had mixed experiences with telling guys after a certain period of time, so I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
First, we are, of course, so sorry about your stage 4 diagnosis and your health crisis. And here's hoping that the liver transplant and whatever other treatments that you're undergoing at the moment are effective and you pull through and you join the ranks of the long-term survivors, which include some people who survived stage 4 cancers. As to your question, your dating profile, putting it out there like that, you're going to scare off some guys. And in that group of guys, maybe some guys you would have wanted to scare off. You might, on the other hand, attract some guys who are creeps and weirdos, who are drawn to you because you're so close to death. And if you can weed those guys out, if you're not interested in going out with a guy like that, a guy who's going to, if not fetishize your issues, regard you as emotionally vulnerable in a way because of your health issues and be tempted to prey on you or leverage what he may believe to be your neediness at this moment against you. You may not feel yourself needy or vulnerable at this moment in your life. That doesn't mean others may not be drawn to you because they assume you could be needy or vulnerable in a way and therefore easily exploited or manipulated at this time of your life. There's a different way of saying I'm only interested in casual sex and I'm not looking for a commitment. You can just say that without mentioning your health challenges. And you can save that discussion for later. As for the fact that you're getting a liver transplant in August, that's not something you are required or obligated to disclose to someone you're seeing casually, having casual sex with, a one-off or even a two or three-off. They don't necessarily need to know that. They don't have a right to know that. Unless you are pulling this person into your life, unless you click with somebody and you become more emotionally involved with them and they begin to make an emotional investment in you and you in them, then you get to the disclosure. Then you get to putting these kinds of non-king cards on the table, these kinds of heavy cards on the table. I would encourage you just to put out there that you're only interested in casual sex. If your health problems aren't apparent, if they're not something that a casual sex partner is going to have to take into account or need to know about going in, you can hold that back and just say, I'm only interested in casual sex, if indeed you only are. People react oddly to anything that rubs their own mortality in their face that isn't a fiction. Game of Thrones, we're fine with all the mortality that gets rubs in our face and that. A friend comes down or a family member comes down with a terminal illness or a partner or someone that we were thinking about dating comes down or is diagnosed stage 4 cancer. People can sometimes withdraw from those relationships. That can be very painful for the ill person. People also can be afraid of initiating a relationship with someone that they know to be ill in a profound way because, not just because they can't handle the illness, but because they don't want to compound that person's pain. Because going into that relationship, if it's a dating relationship and not just a hookup, you want to feel like if it doesn't work out for you for whatever reason, you can pull the plug, if I may use that metaphor, early on and exit the relationship. And someone may hesitate to initiate a relationship with someone they know to be ill because they don't want, if it doesn't work out, and they may not have any reason to believe it wouldn't work out, but if it doesn't, if it didn't work out, they don't want to be the monster who dropped that person or broke up with that person shortly before their liver transplant. And they also don't want to be trapped in a relationship for fear of being perceived to be a monster who broke up with someone a couple of weeks before her scheduled liver transplant. So as great a line that is on your personal ad right now, and as attention getting as I'm sure it's been, I think you should take that off. I think there are ways to communicate where you're at, what you want right now, what you're looking for, without risking the ghouls descending on you and without depriving yourself of the comfort of a weekend-long hookup with somebody who otherwise might not have responded to your ad for fear of exactly what I unpacked, for fear of not being able to end it if they didn't want to continue, or fear of being trapped in it if they couldn't end it, even if they wanted to. Again, really sorry about your health problems at this moment, and here's hoping that you pull through.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 30-year-old heterosexual and a fan of yours for several years now. I have a good problem and a complicated decision process that I could really use your help with. I'm one of those, quote, rare men without a refractory period, or at least that's the best I can conclude. Not only am I, even at 30, capable of having several orgasms without losing my erection, but I actually get harder and last longer after each one. After about the fourth or fifth, I pretty much need a nice cold bath to get rid of it quickly, and I usually notice ejaculate until the fifth. Yeah. On a few occasions, I've even had multiple orgasms, which is nice. That's why it's, like I said, mostly been a good problem, especially with partners who have high sex drives and those that get off on, say, seeing the orgasm. However, it can certainly be frustrating, especially with new partners and all that new relationship energy brings. On such occasions where lots of orgasms are common, 8 to 12, something like that, even if only half of those involve a condom, that's a lot of condoms. More importantly, it's a lot of hassle and risk of pregnancy that my partners and I would rather not worry about. So, yes, I'm considering getting a vasectomy. Ironically, I'm also mature enough to know that I do want to have kids one day. Not anytime soon, but at least one at some point. 7 years sounds like the soonest I would want to start. So that's nearly a decade of awesome vasectomy life, right? But how likely and expensive will it be to get it reversed in 7 years? What about 15? Are there other options to getting a future partner pregnant without a vasectomy reversal? Or should I, in particular, be considering alternatives to vasectomies altogether? Like, are there new surgeries out there, something like that? The benefits and comfort it would give to the women I date are enough to make me wonder why more men aren't doing this, you know, especially if it's so effective and safe. Or is it?
Joining me by phone to help tackle this question, Dr. Landon Trost, an andrologist and head of male infertility at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, who specializes in vasectomy reversals. Hey, Dr. Trost, how are you?
Oh, good. Yeah, thanks for having me, Dan.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. So here we have a caller from one of those rare men out there who doesn't have a refractory period. I've encountered only one of those in the wild in my own personal experience. And he's contemplating getting sort of a strategic vasectomy because he doesn't like having to go through so many condoms and doesn't want to flood someone out by accident. And is this common for people to think about getting a vasectomy that they plan to reverse down the road? Or in your professional experience, are most reversals kind of unexpected events?
I would say it probably depends on the location and kind of demographics of the population for it. But I'd say the far majority come in with a plan for this to be a permanent procedure and not with the intent to reverse it. It's always a little bit of a warning sign if someone does have an intent to reverse it.
And why is that a warning sign?
Well, just because even though techniques are good as far as reversals and in vitro fertilization is available and other things, they're not perfect. And so anytime you do a vasectomy, the intent should always be with the intent of this being a permanent type of contraception.
What's the failure rate for reversals?
So, you know, that depends on a lot of factors, including how you define success and other things. But typically, the overall rate of getting sperm back is high. So you're anywhere from 90%+. It depends on how many years out it's been since the original vasectomy. And then success also depends. If you say, well, what's the chance of a live birth, then that factors in all the female factor side of things, including her age and if she's been pregnant before and other things. So, but success rates are high, but they're not 100%. And it's discouraging when you have one that doesn't work.
Now, whenever you talk about vasectomy or people advocate for it, you know, the phrase that I hear frequently is simple and inexpensive. Is a reversal complicated and pricey, or is it as simple and inexpensive as the vasectomy itself?
I'd say it varies quite a bit. So online, you can find a lot of options of people, for example, that will do it for $1,500 to $3,000, somewhere in that range.
The reversal.
A lot of times, though, these are they're just offering the simple repair, which basically means putting VAS back together with the VAS. But in many cases, you need to do a more complex repair.
Okay,
you
wait, let's pause there for a split second, because I do have a lot of young listeners who may not know what we mean by VAS. The VAS, I believe VAS difference, is that how it's called?
That's correct, yep. So the tube that they cut across during a vasectomy is the VAS deferens, and that's the one that basically transports sperm from the testicle out of the body for it. So,
And I know this is real 101 here, but someone who's had a vasectomy still produces semen. There's just no sperm cells in it because the seminal fluid is produced by other bits and glands, the prostate that's gland correct. Primarily. So there are people out there who think, oh, if you get a vasectomy and you have the, you know, the tubes from your nuts cut, that you're going to dust is going to come out of your dick when you come.
Pardon
me for being crude. That's the way we roll here on the Savage Lovecast. And that's not true. You still produce semen. You still blow loads, guys. You just don't have any sperm cells.
Yeah, and that's true. So when you look at averages, we don't see any change in volume of ejaculate. We don't see any change in sensation, orgasm, ejaculation, anything like that. It's purely that the sperm themselves will no longer be in the ejaculate.
The caller does ask if there are other options. If he gets a vasectomy now for his convenience and he's sick of buying so many condoms and he'd like to fluid bond with his partners without getting them pregnant. Are there other options besides a reversal that he could contemplate in the, you know, 7 to 15 years into the future when he wants to have his own biological children?
Yeah, the other main one is in vitro fertilization. And with that, you'd basically get sperm directly from the testicle. So he'd have to come in one time and get the sperm retrieved. And then his partner would undergo in vitro, which is basically she gets some meds for a period of time. They take the eggs out of the ovary, they mix it with the sperm, and then they put it back into the uterus. And it's fairly successful. So you're looking about 45-50% chance of a live birth per cycle if the female partner is 35 and under and very healthy.
But that's hugely expensive, is it not?
It's expensive for sure. So it's about $15,000 is kind of a good number to go by for the first attempt, and then about $5,000 for each additional attempt.
Vasectomy reversal at $1,500 to $3,000 looks a little cheaper, and you get to make a baby by having sex as opposed to stirring stuff up in a test tube.
Yeah, and really, so those ones are kind of the budget ones for vasectomy reversal. Really, if you wanted one that was done correctly, as far as one that does both either simple or complex repair if needed, you're looking somewhere in probably the $5,000 to $8,000 range for those that that do it without anesthesia. With anesthesia, you're looking all the way up to $30,000 or so.
Now, if this guy came into your office and asked you to help him make this decision. Mm-hmm. What would you tell him?
These ones are tough ones. So there's no right answer in scenarios like this. And so every doctor kind of has their own threshold of what they do. Generally at Mayo, we have a cutoff around age 30. And if someone comes in and they're like 21 and they say, hey, I want a vasectomy for any number of reasons, and they are at that stage, we usually discourage them from doing it just because we know their chance for regret is so high, and we try to do no harm where we can. Mm-hmm. But again, there's no right answer on that. That's very much just a policy decision of an institution. Generally, if someone's 30 and they come in, we say, well, they've had plenty of chance to kind of make decisions in their life and know what they want to do, and so we try not to be too paternalistic on that. But it's a tough decision because you don't want to do harm to people, especially if you know outright that men, for example, under 30 are the highest risk of regretting it later.
Do people freeze their sperm in advance of a vasectomy and just keep it on ice for a decade or two?
Yeah, they do. You don't necessarily need to, though, because your testicle is still making plenty of sperm. And so you can always go back in there and get it as long as you had sperm initially. So you could freeze it if you want, but then you have to pay every year to keep it frozen. And again, if you decide 5 years later you want to achieve a pregnancy, we can just get it from the testicle just as easily as having frozen it. So.
Okay, last question, and then we'll let you go. You've been so generous with your time. Thank you. This option, vasectomy, not the vasectomy reversal, this option, everybody knows about it, but so many men, even men who've had all the children they want to have or know that they don't want to have children, are reluctant to have this procedure performed, even after they know it's not going to affect volume or consistency or aroma or flavor. They're reluctant about doing this. And most of the guys I personally know who've gotten vasectomies, it was really at their partner, their female partner's, not insistence, but instigation. Like it was a conversation and they came around very reluctantly. Why do you think it is that so many men don't want it? I have a theory, but I'm curious what you might think is the reason so many men who don't want kids or had all the kids they want still are opposed to a vasectomy.
Well, so I would agree in that the surgery that we have the highest or highest percentage of runners for that show up, they check in, but then they just don't go through with it is probably vasectomies.
Huh.
I think a lot of it's anxiety of just any sort, anything sharp down in that area just, makes people nervous. And I think also the concept of permanent scares a lot of people away from things, because anytime you're doing anything that's intended to be permanent, people like the option of being able to reverse things. And clearly there's been a strong desire for 10 plus years, or actually much longer than that, of people trying to come up with reversible vasectomies and options that maintain that option for you. But yeah, I think it's that. I think it's the permanence of it that really kind of scares someone away from making a decision on things.
Dr. Landon Trost, an andrologist and head of male infertility at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, specializing in vasectomy reversals. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone today. We really appreciate it.
No, my pleasure. Thank you much.
Hey guys, I have a friend who is in her 60s and has, for the last few decades that I've known her, always struggled with money and finances. And last night I took her out to a concert and, we each paid our own ways. And when we got there, she instantly went to the bar to buy herself a drink and is really rather not of the mind of buying others drinks. And the reason why I'm calling you about this is because I remember being out with a group of friends, including her, in recent weeks, and she actually insisted that we go out to eat somewhere, and she bought herself some food, some extra food to take home from the diner we were eating at, and she was very closed to sharing any of her french fries on her plate. And so I'm just thinking that there's I'd like to be able to communicate in some way to her that giving and sharing reverberates in ways that I think she's not imagining. Her parents aren't alive anymore. She has two brothers, and she has a very problematic relationship with especially one brother. I really think that she's diminishing the sort of friendships that she can cultivate if she was not so focused on herself going out. As her friend, it's a concern, and it's not like I'm looking to score something free from her or something like that. I really just think that she's behaving this way with everybody, and she's losing friendships and the opportunities to really pay respect to the people that she should respect in her life. She wants to cultivate friendships.
Dude, I'm sorry your older friend didn't share her fucking French fries with you. And maybe if she scattered her French fries liberally across the table, she would have more friends and more social contacts. But she does food the way she does food. She wants to pay her own way and take her own leftovers home. And that may be something that as a friend you have to tolerate or put up with if her friendship is worth it. Why she might be this way? Maybe she grew up really fucking poor. And that is traumatizing. Kids who grow up in an environment of food insecurity, as it's called, kids who grow up hungry have shorter lifespans. They have a lot of cortisone in their systems. They have a lot of damage done to them emotionally, to their brains by stress hormones. And they can often, as adults, have issues around food that to others just seem off-putting because they're not sharing. They're not throwing their French fries all over the fucking table for everybody to eat. They're squirreling them away to take them home because they got issues. Or maybe she's on a fixed income and she doesn't have money to buy a round of drinks the way you and the rest of her younger friends do. And rather than accept a round of drinks from you guys when she can't reciprocate, she toddles off to the bar on her own and gets what she needs and not a part of this buy the next round economy that a lot of young people are involved in. You could ask her about it sometime as a friend in a friendly way if you can figure out a way to talk about it that isn't so weird and selfish and off-putting and shamey, and just say, you order it for yourself and you take food home. No, don't even, there's no way to ask her about this. Just leave her the fuck alone. If you don't enjoy eating out with this person because she has like weirdnesses around food and doesn't let you eat her fucking French fries, go to the movies with this person. Don't go out to dinner with this person. Go for a walk with this person. Don't go to a bar with this person. But stop policing your friend's disbursement of her own fucking French fries. Before we get to your response calls, let's read a few of your tweets. Katie Winkle's tweets, listening to Dan Savage school this caller about keeping her nose out of other people's business, and goddamn, everyone should listen to this. Hashtag Savage Lovecast. Joel tweets, this week's Savage Lovecast featured a question from a caller who wants to create a gay nation state, which at fake Dan Savage called Gay Israel. That's a terrible name for marketing purposes. I propose Jizrael. Other options? Cameroon? Clitaly? Bangladesh? Don't even need to change the name. Or we could borrow a page from the white supremacists in the 80s and all of us move to one state and take it over. We'll call it Guidaho? Moving on. Donna Whittington tweets, hey Dan, thank you for setting the caller straight about reparations in the gay community. Never, ever say reparations again in that context. You crushed it, Dan. Hashtag Savage Lovecast. Thank you very much, Donna. Finally, Melissa tweets, at fake Dan Savage, maybe it's high time for another 1 Minute Wonder episode. To be honest, that 15-minute call about the lady's aunt almost killed me. You and me both, Melissa. A 1 Minute Wonder show. We haven't done one of those in a long time. That's where questions have to be kept to under a minute, and my answers, because it's my show, under 2 minutes. We will now gather at Melissa's suggestion, 1 Minute Wonder questions. If you have a 1 Minute Wonder question, give us a call, 206-302-2064. Keep it to under a minute, and we will bang through as many questions as we possibly can on an upcoming 1 Minute Wonder show. Remember, if you want me to read your tweet on a future show, use the hashtag SavageLovecast. And now your response calls.
Hi, I'm calling in response to episode 654, the woman who was upset that men asked her to leave after they'd slept together. She needs to get over herself. I live alone and I never let men spend the night. And sometimes I tell them before we fuck and sometimes they don't. I have let one guy spend the night one time because he was visibly drunk and I wasn't about to have that on my conscience, but I made him sleep on the couch. If I am having you over for like just a casual hookup, I'm not interested in spending the night with you. And I live alone for a reason. I don't have roommates for a reason. I'm not in a relationship for a reason. The first time I hang out with someone, the first time I fuck someone, I'm not trying to like get in with their snoring and their like sleep talking. Ugh, that's gross to me. So I think she just needs to get over herself. I think that, you know, there is no expectation of an egg in the morning just because, you know, I let you in between my legs.
Yo, Dan the man. I'm just calling in response to the girl who was forced to leave after fornicating at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning. You're right on, but there was one really big thing that I thought you'd say, but you didn't. Who the fuck is going to let a woman travel at 1 a.m.? That's so messed up. All right, thanks for the sex. Here you go. Good luck in the dark. Hope you don't get raped or murdered. What? That's not a gentleman. I'm sorry. If he wants her to leave, at least take her back home, motherfucker.
Hey, Dan, this is for the woman in episode 654 who called herself a lesbian but has been dating men and gets really nervous when she dates men. Here's an idea. Don't call yourself a lesbian. How about bi or queer or any other fucking term you choose that doesn't mean a woman who only sleeps with women? I'm a lesbian, and I am incapable of enjoying sex with a man. I'm not sexually attracted to them, and I will never sleep with a man again. That is what a lesbian. And when girls like you call yourself a lesbian and then go sleeping with men regularly, it tells men and all of his friends that he talks to that the word lesbian doesn't mean shit. Just the other day, I could tell this guy was hitting on me, and I told him, don't bother, I'm a lesbian. And his response was, oh, I can turn you. And the reason he thinks that is because of girls like you who use our term when it really doesn't define you. I get it. Labels can be dumb, but we have them for a reason. And the fact is that lesbian means a woman who is only attracted to and only sleeps with women. So how about doing all of the real lesbians in the world a favor and don't go telling guys that you're a lesbian and then fuck them.
All right, we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Savage Love Live will be in Denver this weekend, May 18th at the Oriental Theater. I'll be answering your burning questions on stage, and I'll have very special guests, Karina Lucas and Carsey Blanton there. Karina Lucas, comedian, Carsey Blanton, singer-songwriter. They're both hilarious and terrific. Go to savagelovecast.com to get tickets. And my Dirty Little Porn Film Festival Hump will be in Philadelphia and Bend, Oregon this weekend. Head over to humpfilmfest.com to get your tickets. And finally, my latest film festival, Spliff, short trippy movies by stoners for stoners, is playing in Bellingham, Washington on May 18th. Go to splifffilmfest.com to find out more and get your tickets. In addition to sending us your one-minute wonder questions, questions under a minute, we're also devoting an entire episode upcoming to BDSM. If you have questions about S&M, whether you're into it or not into it, give us a call, 206-302-2064, with your BDSM questions. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian, and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy will all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for coming.